Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Ah, good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to a happy show. Wow. Anybody remember that word? You know, part of our creed in this country is supposedly life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But when you look around America, especially today, we're not seeing too many happy people. So maybe this is going to be a good reminder that we are here to be happy. My guest is Adam Schell. He's a producer of a fabulous film, Pursuing Happiness. It just was seen and shown at the film festival in Sedona last week. And Adam actually got this together on Kickstarter. So let me say good morning to Adam Schell. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm happy to have you. Adam, the story of this movie is amazing by itself, let alone the movie. And I want to get into that with you, but I do want to tell you, years ago when I used to get on the road and go state to state, I did a Southwest tour of lectures, and one of my lectures was on happiness. And
oh, really?
And it's kind of interesting because what I would do is I would put up a picture on the front of the room as the audience was coming in of happy. And underneath it, it said, happy isn't just one of the seven dwarves.
Huh.
And everybody would walk in the room and see it and get a kick out of it. But what bothered me was when I asked the audience if they were happy, very few people raised their hand. And then I asked them what they do and when was the last time they were happy, and no one raised their hand.
Wow.
And that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I think it's only gotten worse. In some ways, it's gotten worse. In some ways, it's actually gotten better. You know, it's interesting you say that because one of the things that we discovered, and I think one of the big factors in happiness and how we perceive it and feel it is this idea of self kind of a diagnosis, for lack of a better term, of being able to judge whether we're happy or not. And I think there are so many factors in our lives that are telling us these are the things that should make you happy. And if you don't have these specific things, you are not happy. And then when we don't have those things, we feel unhappy or we feel like we aren't happy because we don't have them. And then we start judging ourselves for not being happy. And then it just kind of continues this spiraling cycle downward. And I think a lot of it is defining happiness and getting people to understand what true happiness really is and giving people a better way to judge themselves so that when you do ask that question, they have an appropriate measure to set, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I constantly tell people that happiness is an inside job.
Yes, it absolutely is. And that's exactly it. I mean, so much of our happiness depends on external factors, or we think it does. And that's, you know, this conditional happiness. I will be happy when X happens or when, you know, I achieve this and all that stuff. And it just doesn't, it's not real. It doesn't equate. And that's why so many people are left empty and feeling unhappy is because we just measure it wrong.
Exactly.
We weigh it against the wrong things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's just part of our programming, you know, that things are going to make you happy. You know, I have a counseling business that I do, and with a lot of couples, I counsel a lot of couples. One of the problems that I find with most couples is they expect their partner to make them happy, which is an unfair, unrealistic expectation. And I said, no, you have to be happy. If you're happy, your partner will be happy with you.
Exactly. And that's the only way you can make your partner happy, is to be happy yourself.
Right. Exactly. You know, I don't, I'm sure you haven't seen the book. Maybe you have. But years ago, I came across this cute little book. It was one of those small little chunky books. And this woman, for whatever reason, she started writing a list when she was a child of everything that makes her happy. The entire book is just the list. And I think she called it 10,000 Things That Make Me Happy. And I've recommended that to a lot of people and said, just look through this girl's list. There's got to be something in there that makes you happy. She's got like 30 years of things that made her happy, even everything from hanging clothes outdoors to, you know, painting her toenails. But I thought it was an adorable book, and what a great idea to do something like that.
You know, it really is interesting that she did that, and I think that part of what made her happy was the act of just taking a moment to recognize those things. And that's something, you know, it's a great lesson for all of us, because that's something we can all do, is take that moment and say, hey, here's something that makes me happy. I'm happy about that. Great. She took a little bit more. She wrote it down and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we all don't necessarily have the time to write
a book. But you know what? Years. Eventually, when she grew up, she just got it printed. You know, she just put it together in a book. And, you know, for everybody listening, if that sounds like it's just too much for you, what about at the end of the day? Just, you know, when you're getting into bed, say, you know, what made me happy today? And so you know, and you can repeat it the next day.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's actually funny. My wife and I do that when we have dinner with the kids. You know, we have dinner, family dinner, several nights a week. And that's one of the things that we do is, all right, what made you happy today? What was good that happened? Just to reflect on those moments. You know, we also do, you know, what were any problems you encountered today to kind of help process those things and all that. But it's really important, I think, to take that moment and just be grateful for the things that are great, because, you know, what else you got, really?
Exactly. Well, you know, here in the United States, you know, you look at the statistics of how many people are unhappy. We just had that horrible event in Orlando. And I had seen a meme online that said, less hate, more dancing. Of course, you know, related to the club where the kids were out dancing. And that tripped me back to, you know, when I saw that meme, and there's a lot of power in some of these memes. When I saw that meme, I thought about an old movie this morning, Hold That Ghost, with Abbott and Costello. And I remembered there was a very famous band leader in the 1920s. Named Ted Lewis, and he has a spot in that movie where he comes out at a nightclub and he sings one of his songs that made him very famous, which was called Is Everybody Happy? And he would start the song with, if everybody's happy, then everybody dance. And I think that if we did have more dancing in the world, people would be a lot happier, because I think music just speaks to everybody's soul, makes everybody one. When you're on the dance floor, you're not worried about who everybody else is, what's their religion, what's their deal. Music to me is just like an international language of love. So if you're sitting in your house and it's quiet all day, put some tunes on. If you're depressed, put some tunes on. For me, the 60s music always brings my spirits up.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting you say that about the dancing and the tunes and all that kind of stuff, because one of the things that we talk about in the film and one of the big things I learned is, you know, the reason why happiness exists. You know, if you think about the emotion of happiness, and, you know, we have a wide range of emotions that we are so lucky and blessed to be able to experience as humans. And if you think about happiness and you're like, okay, well, why does that exist? What's the function of it in our society? I mean, you take a look at something like fear, and that's pretty easy to identify. Okay, it's for survival. You know, if a charging lion's coming to eat you, fear is what kicks in and tells you run, right? Protect yourself.
Right.
Happiness, the interesting thing is that happiness is as much for our survival as fear is, and it's somewhat of a strange concept to think about, but you know, given that we are not the strongest animals on the planet and a charging lion would easily eat us alive, the one thing that we have that does allow us to survive is our strength in numbers and that bond that we share in togetherness. And the things that we can accomplish as, you know, a group of people are far much more than what we can accomplish as an individual. And it is happiness that makes us want to form groups and makes us want to bond with each other and create that connection. Mm-hmm. And happiness is the glue that keeps us a group, keeps us a unit.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about your little journey here to put this film together. You started a campaign on Kickstarter, but I do want to ask you first, what made you decide to take on this journey to find out what makes people happy?
You know, it was several things, one of which was, I was so sick and tired of all the doom and gloom talk that exists everywhere. You know, every news channel you turn on, it's all about, you know, our greatest failings in as humans, as a culture. You cannot get away from the negativity that just permeates our society. And I was so sick and tired of it. And as a documentary filmmaker, you know, there's a lot of stories to be told out there. And when I was thinking about making my next film, I was like, well, what kind of film do I want to make? You know, and while a lot of these films that talk about, you know, social injustice issues or, you know, global warming or all these things, while they're very important and they shed light on things that we otherwise might not know about, they also make you pretty depressed.
Yeah.
I didn't want to make one of those films. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And so I was like, well, you know, let's make people happy. I want to make a film that actually, when people walk out of the theater, they feel good about themselves. They feel good about the world. They feel recharged. I felt like that would do more good than anything if you just give people a little inspiration, a little hope, and all that. So it kind of started there and then blossomed into this idea about, you know, just what if we do a documentary on happiness itself and talk to the happiest people, because in my eyes, they're the ones with the best sources of, I don't want to say knowledge per se, because it's not a studied knowledge, but it's an experiential knowledge that to me has more power to inspire and to connect with people.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
so
they're living
it. That's what kicked it off.
Right. Well, they're actually living their happiness, you know. Sometimes exactly. I'll just crack up laughing or whatever, and my friends will call and say, what are you so happy about? And I'll just say, that's their answer, what are you so happy about? And I'll just turn around and say, I'm just having a day of unexplained happiness, and I'm enjoying it. You know, there were just days where you're elated, and you don't need to know the reason. Do you know what I mean? But
exactly.
Today, if
you
walk down the street and smile at somebody, they look at you like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, there is that thing that people are like, wait, yeah, you shouldn't be happy. I'm not happy. You shouldn't be happy.
Right, let me smack that smile right off your face.
Right? But the interesting thing is, you know, happiness is contagious. You know, it's like, and that's one of the other things about the film for me was, I was like, well, you know, if we make a film and put all these happy people talking about, you know, how they view life and how they, you know, see, you know, happiness and what role it has, I said, it's got to rub off on people. If you watch the film, you got to just feel happy afterwards. And I think the effect is pretty real and pretty positive.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's a lot of scientific data on top of the, you know, the happy people that we actually did seek out, and it does have a big role in the film. And that there is data that proves that happiness is contagious.
Happiness is also healthy.
Seek out each other.
Right. Happiness is also going to assure you better health than being miserable all the time. I often tell people to eliminate the negatives in their lives, the things they don't want to do, the things they don't have to do, the people they don't need around them. You know, when I was a kid, my mom used to always tell us, show me your friends and I'll show you who you are. So if you're surrounded by negative people all the time, it's almost impossible to be happy and stay in that state.
Yeah, very, very true. It is very true. It is really difficult to stay happy when somebody is just constantly being negative around you.
Absolutely. So you got to eliminate what I call the deadly Klingons.
It's very true. And, you know, it's interesting. I've had to do that multiple times in my life, disconnect myself from miserable people. And, you know, sometimes you like them, and it's not, you don't want to do it because you don't like the person, mm-hmm. but at some point you're just like, I just can't spend all this time just constantly hearing about all this problems.
Right.
You know, what's wrong.
Right. But there are some people who are genuinely happy only when they're miserable. That is their happiness.
Yeah. You know what? I would argue that it's not happiness. I would argue it's contentment, and they're content to be miserable. They're comfortable when they're miserable. Mm. Misery is a subject they know well, and they're very used to, but I would not argue that they are happy at all.
Right. Well, that's probably a better way of putting it. I remember that old expression, misery loves company.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a lot of times I tell people, because I know the circle of friends they have, I said, listen, when something good happens in your life, don't share it with those people, because they're always the ones to say, you know, the downers that are going to come back, why you can't do that, why it's a bad idea, this and that. And sometimes you have to keep your happiness a little under the QT, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is sad.
Sometimes there are certain people you can't share it with, but... You know, I always try to encourage people to find the people you can share it with, mm-hmm. and live there.
Exactly.
You know, and that's exactly what we did to make this film. Is, you know, I spent almost 2 years traveling the country looking for the happiest people in America. And let me tell you how glorious that was to just spend every day with people that were, you know, referred to us by somebody as the happiest person they know.
I saw how happy you were doing it. You know what I mean? and even the way you self-admitted, I forget who it was you were talking to. You're talking in the film, you know, I don't even know what I'm talking about here. And this guy was like, talking to you. And, you know, you're kind of a crack up yourself, to tell you the truth. I was like, yeah, I've been there too. Some of the facts in your film, you list the United States as number 23 in the world in happiness. Not a good number.
Yeah.
I think I've read, or maybe I saw it in your film, 80% of all the antidepressants created in this world are eaten by Americans.
That is true. It
doesn't bode well. I mean, you look at the election, you look at the infighting between fans of either party. You look at, you know, the murders, this, that. I mean, everybody just seems to be on their last nerve, but I think that 80% of all antidepressants eaten by Americans could answer that question, since the side effects are, you know, suicide and murderous feelings.
Yeah, I mean, listen, depression is a serious problem, and I'm not going to discount in any way the people who really need those medications because they have some sort of clinical issue. And they're there. They're definitely there. But there's also a lot of people out there who don't need those medications, who are just feeling down, feeling depressed, feeling unhappy, and they're prescribed these medications because it's like, oh, just pop a pill and you'll be happy again. And the sad thing is it doesn't work. If you don't have a clinical issue that you've got some sort of a real chemical imbalance, those drugs aren't going to make you happy. There's no such thing as a happy pill.
No, of course not. But it's kind of sad when you look at it, that when I was a kid, you know, if somebody was depressed, we used to call that being sad. Okay.
Yes.
But now everything is a disease. You know, childhood is a disease today. Let's give this kid this pill. Let's give this kid that pill.
That's right. You know, it won't be long before happiness is a disease, too. It'll be like, oh, you're too happy. Take this pill.
Right. Let me make you a nasty person instead. I got to tell you, there were so many great people in your film that you got to interview. I was a little jealous. I couldn't pick out.
That's why I made it, to share them.
I couldn't pick out who was my favorite. But certain things in there just, you know, I mean, there was one point where I, you know, actually shed a few tears, and that was with the man who had two prosthetics for arms after he got to play the piano and he had to go wipe his tears. But you look at how happy he is in the rest of his life, a single father who raised his daughter by himself with, you know, basically no arms. And yet his attitude is better than people that don't have those kind of handicaps.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is definitely a testament to life goes on and you make the best of it and you live where things are great, not where they're horrible. I mean, yeah, he's at 30 years old. I mean, he was a piano player for most of his life. A very accomplished piano player, and at 30 years old, he doing what his father deemed as a real job. He got, you know, electrocuted by high voltage power lines and lost both of his arms. He was lucky to survive, and I think, you know, and he always says, you know, he's like, you know, life is not about what I don't have. You know, there's a lot of things in the world that people don't have, and if we all focus on what we don't have, of course we're going to be miserable. Of course we're going to be unhappy. It's about the things we do have that actually bring happiness, you know, and every single one of us has plenty of things in our lives that we, you know, can focus on that bring us joy and happiness. And that's, you know, at the end of the film, that's what Gloria says, who also another extremely inspirational person, you know, is 28 years old. She's diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, and somehow it was the best thing that ever happened to her, which is just incredible, right? And her too. I mean, she says at the end of the film, she's like, "You got to figure out what makes you happy." It's like that list you were talking about. You got to figure that out, and when you figure it out, do it.
Right.
Do that.
Right. I mean, she was a hero without question of a doubt. A great example of a human being who understands not a one of us has a guarantee how many years we're going to be here. But she used every minute of the day, even when she was in the hospital. She was cracking everybody up. She was playing around. And, of course, I related to her with her garden because gardening certainly can calm anybody down and make you happy. And I just thought she was a great example of a fabulous human being. She didn't let anything get her down. I mean, it was terrible that, you know, she didn't survive it. But like I said, nobody gets a, you know, I kind of always tell my kids, you know, death doesn't have a number. You know, nobody has a guarantee you're going to hit 90 years old. Okay. You never know when that's going to happen, but it's not how long you live, but how you live that matters.
Exactly. Because you know what? Any one of us can get hit by a truck tomorrow or anything can happen and it's over. You know, we don't know. And what you want to be able to say in those final moments is, I did it right. I lived a great life, short, long, whatever it was. It was great and I loved it. And then the amazing thing and what John and Gloria and so many other people in the film all are a testament to is we have that power. Each and every one of us, no matter what our circumstances, no matter what we're going through, we have the power to make it great.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
It's all about our attitude and the things we choose. And, you know, listen, there's this cliche that I even say, and you hear it so many times, like happiness is a choice. And while it is, it's not as easy as it's just a choice. You know, you can't necessarily boil it down to, oh, I choose to be happy, therefore I am. It's happiness is not like something that you just say, oh, I choose to be it. It's when you have to, it's a reward. Happiness is a reward for other things that you choose to do.
Right.
So if you choose to do things that reward you with happiness, then you will get happiness. But if you choose to do things that don't reward you with happiness, you won't get happiness. And, you know, that's really one of the main lessons that I tried to you know, put in the film and expose really, you know, thoroughly in the film is that idea of it is a choice and it's the things that we do that bring us happiness, not just this pursuit of, oh, I want to be happy.
Right. Well, I mean, it's also, you know, when I think about it, I look at the news and, you know, this morning I saw, you know, some ugliness out of Detroit. You know, Detroit, all we see is bad news, bad news, bad news. But I have to tell you, when I saw those two young men with their program Sit On It, Detroit, I fell in love with those two guys. Okay. I was like, wow, what a great idea. And they're happy because they're doing things that make other people happy.
Exactly.
So how important do you think that is, you know, that your happiness depends on what you do for others?
I mean, it's so true. Those guys are a true testament to that. I mean, look at that. They grew up in Detroit, a city that is, you know, riddled with corruption and problems and bankruptcy and, you know, all these issues. And, you know, that's one of the things people said to us time and time again. Oh, you're going to Detroit? Good luck finding happy people there, you know. It's like, you know what? I am a believer there's happy people everywhere. I don't need to, you know, go to the happy place to find happy people. They're everywhere. And just because a city is in dire straits and has some poor circumstances doesn't mean that people can't be happy there. And that's a testament to Detroit and those guys is when you actually boil it down and say, yeah, we're in a bad way. We're having some bad times. But what we can do is protect each other and fend for each other and help each other out. And that will not only make us individually happier, it'll make the people we're helping out happier. It'll make our community happier and stronger. And when you start there, that's where the positivity grows and it builds. And I will tell you this, you know, so many people have this bad image of Detroit, but the experience that I had there, I absolutely love Detroit. I think it is a phenomenal city. I think there's, you know, opportunities coming up everywhere you look. The development is, you know, starting to happen there. And the people, moreover, the people are just amazing. They love their city. They love their community. Mm-hmm. They love each other. And there's something so beautiful about that, that with the backdrop of, you know, burned out buildings and destruction all over the place, you have this community of people that bind together, that bond with each other and support each other and take care of each other in a way that, you know, we certainly don't have that in Los Angeles the way they do there.
Right. Well, you don't see that in Phoenix, Arizona either. But what's interesting to me is, you know, I remember years ago, when Bette Midler got involved in cleaning up a dirty lot and putting in a garden, and she got some flack for it, but eventually she won the right to keep that garden there. You look at community gardens. I remember when I lived in New York, in Long Beach, we had these useless grass dividers between both sides of the street. And we all decided that as a community, we were going to take the grass out and build a community garden for the neighborhood. And it was one of the best experiences you could have. But if people think they have to wait on the government to do these things, then they've forgotten that we, the people, are we, the people. And it's up to us. We don't need anybody's charity. I mean, when there's a tragedy, you see how quickly people can pull together.
Yeah, no, that is the incredible thing, is you do see that. You saw that in New York on 9/11. You see that in just the other day in Florida, you know, how when there is a tragedy, we do come together and support each other incredibly. Mm-hmm. The sad thing is that it takes that to bring us together, you know. We should be that strong community that supports each other and is there for each other regardless of what's going on, you know, in the good times and the bad. Mm-hmm. And there's so many great pictures of that within the film. I mean, just talk about, you know, Ken and when he was talking about living with the tribe in the Amazon for 2 years. And then he said they were the happiest people he'd ever known in his life.
Because they were totally self-sufficient too.
Yeah, they're totally self-sufficient. And it wasn't just their self-sufficiency. It was their communal attitude. It was that no one person is an individual, that everybody is part of the community and the community is part of everybody. And that's what brought them the greatest happiness, is that they lived for each other. And, you know, we can all take a lesson from that. It's, you know, and if you think about it, it's like, that's what we all want, right? We all want good family, good friends, you know, and then enough food to eat, right?
Right.
But that's where it starts, is the family and friends. And, you know, and if you have that, you will have everything else you need. And there's a lot of other, you know, data that we didn't put in the film that, you know, there's examples of this all over the world, societies, countries, that, you know, when they have the stronger communities, they're happier people. And if you go back to that list, right, mm-hmm. the list of happiest countries in the world that, you know, when I started this film in 2012, we were number 23 on that list. It's a testament to how our society, how we think about each other. We're very individualistic. You know, we are, it's a me society. It's I got mine.
Right. And I also think that social media and, you know, people spending so much time on their gadgets and whatnot has isolated us even more.
Right. Absolutely. It's definitely isolating. It's amazing because it, you know, it's something that's designed to bring us together, and there are so many things about it that do bring us together. They do bring us this community, but it's not the same. It's not the community that you can reach out and touch and feel. It's a community of one-way communication. Mm-hmm. It's a community of I post something and you read my post. We each have an individual experience with that bit of information. I, you know, perceive it the way I perceive it when I post it, and you perceive it the way you perceive it when you read it. And there's no shared experience in there other than, okay, yeah, you know what's going on in my life. I know what's going on in your life, but there's no shared experience.
Right. There's no hey, let's hang up, you know, let's hang this up and meet for a cup of coffee. You know, let's meet in person. Let's chit chat in person. But even when you go out, and I'm sure you see it in LA, you know, people could be sitting out at dinner or sitting on the beach, and they're not even talking to each other because they're all busy on their gadgets talking to somebody else.
Yeah, that's the worst.
I know.
Cringe every time I see it. And you know what? We're all guilty of it. I'm not going to say I never do it. but we are addicted to the gadgets, and it is crazy that, you know, the worst is when I do see people sitting there at a table across from each other, and they're both on their gadgets doing something that has nothing to do with the person sitting right across from them.
I know. You know. Well, but they're not even really enjoying their dinner or being fully present. And I think being fully present to life is part of being happy.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. It's amazing how addicted to that stuff we really are. And it's funny. I was just had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day. He had one of those smart watches that buzzed his wrist every time he got an email. And he said he had to quit. And he was like, listen, I used to smoke. It was harder to quit the watch than it was to quit smoking.
I'm sure it was. Adam, we're going to take a short break, then we'll be back. So stay with us. Adam Schell and I will be right back.
She's been called Paula Revere, the mother of the internet and even a legend. The mouth that roars all truth without any input from corporate, religious, or political affiliations. Maria's in it just like you are. Often imitated but never duplicated. Commercial-free talk providing a real education in a world filled with lies, cover-ups, and propaganda. Subscribe now and encourage your friends to do the same. Feel good about supporting real media that supports you and all life on this planet. Pick a subscription of your choice and get started on the journey down the rabbit hole. If you are financially challenged or a senior on a limited income, please send an email to maria@maria.net and she will work something out for you. There's never been a more dangerous or exciting time to be alive. Education is a necessity now. Stay informed. Subscribe today at www.meria.net.
Welcome back. I'm speaking with Adam Schell, the producer of Pursuing Happiness, and you can get a copy at pursuinghappiness.com. If you're not happy, this film might be a great film for you to see, and I think you'll be a lot happier once you do see it. I was a little jealous when, Adam, when you got to have dinner at Mario's house.
Right?
The Italian cook. Listen, being Italian, I can tell you, we love to cook for other people. Okay? That's the way we share our love and happiness.
It's fabulous. It's truly fabulous. I mean, and that's, and it's so true, because Mario, you know, 90-year-old guy who is just, you know, I love, every time I see him on the screen, I'm like, oh, I love this guy. When we connected with him and we were like, hey, we're going to come over and do this interview, he goes, all right, what do you want for lunch? And we're like, no, don't worry about that. We're just going to hang out. He goes, no, I'm making you lunch. You tell me what you want, I'm making it.
Right. No, the Italians, we're going to feed you whether you're hungry or not. But that's, you know, that's the way it was when I was growing up. You know, my parents always socialized a lot. They socialized with people of all different colors, sizes, shapes, religions, didn't matter to them. And that was always, you know, the socialization always happened around the dining room table. It was, come over, we're cooking. Okay.
Yeah.
And even if you said, no, Mr. Rubino, I just had lunch, you'd still put food in front of your face, and they were insulted if you didn't eat it. So I saw Mario, I saw the happiness he had while he was slicing his gabagol there, or sopressata, and looking at it like, right, it was gold, and it reminded me so much of my parents that I could totally relate. I think one of the most important things is being your true self, and I think a lot of people today are just not living their authentic self for whatever reason. What will people think? You know, how do I look? Blah, blah, blah.
It is true, and you know, it's something that, it's an art that we've almost, I don't want to say lost, but it's something that we don't encourage as much, is figuring out what you love and who you are. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the most important things, not only the happiness, I mean, obviously happiness is definitely a huge reward for that, but just for life and for success and for accomplishment, is you got to figure out who you are and what you love, because if you're constantly trying to be something you're not, you're going to constantly find yourself in situations where you're not thriving, you're not comfortable, you're not performing at your best.
Right.
And when you're in those situations, you're going to be unhappy because you're uncomfortable and you're not you. And so it's something that I think is really, really valuable to teach children, is, you know, figure that out. And you know, it's not only teach children, but teach adults who teach children, you know,
right,
to not guide children to something they want them to be, but to guide children to that discovery.
Right. To encourage whatever, you know, that child is good at or interested in, you know, and I think a lot of parents make that mistake, you know, the football hero dad who wants his kid to be a jock. The kid has about as much athletic activity as a rock, but is pushed, right, into something he doesn't want, and it creates more unhappiness all throughout the family. You know, but to me, yeah, if you have a son and he likes to paint, okay, maybe this is what the kid is. He's an artist, you know, maybe he wants to go into ballet. You have to encourage your child to do what they want to do. And I constantly remind my granddaughters, whatever they're doing in their life, make sure it's your dream and not somebody, yeah, else's.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because this film, you know, in a large way, this film represents that for me. For 15 years, I ran a company in Los Angeles that, you know, I was never miserable doing that job. I was never miserable. In fact, I enjoyed it.
Right.
But I was always had this conflict in me of, this is not you. This is not the authentic you. And while you may enjoy it, you may find this interesting, it's not you. And I didn't want to be known as that guy who ran that company. I wanted to be known as something else. And it was when I sold that company finally and said, you know what, I'm going to take a leap and I'm going to put all my effort into filmmaking, which was something I did on the side and I enjoyed it immensely. But when I finally did it full time and I said, I'm going to put my heart and soul and every, you know, bit of effort I can into this, that's when I truly discovered myself. And I said, you know what? This is me.
Right.
This is really me. And And in that, and not that I wasn't making a film about happiness, which brought me great joy, it was also that discovery of finding out that, like, this is where I am most comfortable. This is where I feel my talents are the best used. Mm-hmm. And I get the most reward out of it, personally. And mind you, I don't make nearly the money I was making when I was running that company.
Yeah, but are you happier?
Not even close.
But are you happier?
I'm so much happier. You know, it's one of the things I discovered and we touch upon in the film is that, you know, it's like that eternal question. Can money buy you happiness? And, you know, we all know the answer. We all know the answer is no.
Right, we've heard that all our lives. Money can't buy you happiness, but it can buy you everything else. That's the other part.
Right, and we think, we believe that those things will bring us happiness because that's kind of how we're taught and we're raised and what our country is built on. Mm-hmm. And you can't separate that out of our brain, right? We live in this capitalist society. We're not going to change it. It's what it is. And so what we have to do is we have to figure out the other things that are related to happiness and understand that, okay, having the $1 million home and the, you know, $100,000 car and the gold watch and the fancy clothes, those things might be cool and fun, mm-hmm. but they're not necessarily going to bring us happiness. So it's separating those things out to realize that, you know, there's other things we can and should do that will bring us happiness. And then if we also want to pursue money, great, fine, but don't expect it to bring happiness because it's not going to.
Right. You know, there's so many songs. I'm thinking about so many songs. You know, maybe they're a little too old for you to remember. But so many songs like I Miss the Lean Times, okay? Because people that do make it, you know, they forget how happy they were when they were in the struggle. You know, they had their companions, they had their families. Sometimes you don't know when you're better off. I remember one evening when my son was still living with me, we had, you know, typical Italian dinner. I don't know, maybe I made pesto and spaghetti and a salad. And then we had the pleasure of sitting outside and just looking at the stars. And I remember saying to my son, understand this, we had a good meal, you have a clean bed to sleep in, you got a shower, we're sitting out under the stars, it doesn't get any better than this. You could have bigger or more expensive, but you're never going to have better than a good meal, a good sleep, and to be able to sit out in nature.
It's so true. I mean, we talked to Michael Norton from Harvard, who, I mean, what he does is he studies and teaches the relationship between money and happiness. And he wrote a great article in the New York Times that I'd seen, which is how I connected with him. I found that article and searched him out. And it basically stated that once you make about $75,000 for a family of four, it's a little higher now, but back when he wrote the article, it was about $75,000 a year for a family of four is where that relationship between money and happiness ceases to exist. He goes, anything beyond that, the money doesn't bring you any more happiness because that level is what it takes to have the exact things that you just described, a clean bed, food on the table, a shower, you know, all the basics, all the basic things we need to not worry that, you know, we don't know where the next meal's coming from. And then beyond that, there's no relation. And I said, well, you know, you've done a lot of research in this. I said, well, is there a relationship between happiness and money that does work? That, you know, once you have exponential money, you know, it does work. And he said, yeah. He goes, the thing that we really try to do is we try to get people to understand that it's not about having the money. It's about what you do with the money. He goes, we did this study. He goes, if I give you $20 right now and said, this is for you, do whatever you want. He goes, the first 15 things you're going to think about are things for yourself. You know, you're going to think about, oh, I'm going to go buy a cup of coffee or a new article of clothing or go see a movie or something, all based on yourself. He goes, none of those things will bring you more happiness. They might keep you occupied. They might, you know, satisfy a craving, but they won't bring you more happiness. He goes, but if you turn that money outward and you said, you know what, I'm going to go buy somebody else a cup of coffee. I'm going to buy somebody else a gift.
Right.
He goes, instantly you see that brings you more happiness, which brings us to a larger idea of, you know, when you're talking about very, very wealthy people, he goes, the idea of money and happiness is never satiated, because we studied very, very wealthy people. We talked to, you know, people, let's say they make $1 million a year, and we asked them, we said, how much more money would it take for you to be a perfect tenant in happiness? And invariably, all of them said 3 times as much.
Crazy.
And it's really interesting, because we also had the people that make 3 times as much as them.
Right.
And they gave us the exact same answer, 3 times as much.
Well, to me, so it's like, how much do you need? You know, I think about George Carlin's skit on Stuff. You know, the more stuff you have, I think the more paranoid you get. You know, and he would go into how you need an alarm system. Now you got to worry about somebody stealing your stuff. You got to have bodyguards, this and that. You know, you look at Hillary and Trump, okay? They're both millionaires. Do either one of those two people look happy to you? Does anybody in Congress who's all millionaires, do they look happy? They all have what now is termed the standing bitch face.
Right.
They just never look happy. You know, I looked at Mario slicing his prosciutto. He was happy. I look at those two boys building benches so people have a place to sit. They were happy. But when you look at people that have big bucks, they never seem to look genuinely happy. You know, they know how to smile for the camera, but that's about it.
You know, it's really interesting you say that, because on this journey, you know, and literally we asked hundreds and hundreds of people for referrals. Now, we had one rule on this journey to make this film, and the rule was you couldn't refer yourself, which goes back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, being able to self-report.
Right.
We're always bad at self-reporting our happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But we found that other people, your close friends and family, are really good at reporting on you.
Right.
So if you ever want to know how you're doing, ask somebody close to you. They're going to probably give you a more honest answer than you want, but it will probably be more close to the truth than you would think yourself. And what's really cool about that was, you know, invariably we would ask, you know, meet somebody, and they would almost always say, oh, really? They thought I was the happiest person? Oh, that's so interesting. I don't think I'm that happy. And so it's really, and after talking to them for about 5 minutes, you're like, oh, yeah, I totally get why they said that. You're absolutely a really happy person. And 90% of the time, it was them bringing happiness to other people.
Right.
And that's what we witnessed. And if there's anything I could say, people always ask me, you know, what'd you learn? What'd you find? And, you know, everybody wants the soundbite, right? And unfortunately, the soundbite is not as easy as you'd like it to be. But the soundbite I would give is bring happiness to other people, and that will make you happy.
I can't disagree with that. You know, to me, it gives me great, not that I'm rolling in dough, but if I see somebody who's in trouble or, you know, crying they can't pay their rent or whatever, to me, it's like, you know what? You know, I was in that position too when I was their age, and if a few bucks can turn that around, why not? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why I always encourage people. You know, a lot of these charities that are out there are mostly bogus. Most of the money goes to the CEOs. If you see somebody in need on the street, just give them the money. You know, I hate when people say, oh, if I give this panhandler 20 bucks, he's just going to buy alcohol. Well, then that's not really giving. It doesn't matter what they're going to use the money for. You know, if you kept the 20 bucks, you might buy alcohol. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But to me, I believe in direct giving, because that way I can see the person's face. They just opened some sort of a halfway house here in my town. And when the guy who does my landscaping told me about it, I gave him furniture. I gave him bedding. You know, I packaged huge bags of clothes for, you know, big brothers, big sisters, you know, where it's direct. You put it in the bin, you know, that's where it's going.
Right.
And
right.
I don't need to, you know, brag about it or whatever, but it's like, to me, just directly helping someone else, at least you know where it went. And it does make you feel good. How can you not feel good?
Well, and that's exactly the point right there. I mean, that's why you do it that way, because your charitable giving isn't just about, hey, I want to feel good about myself for giving to charity. It's, I want to know that I'm actually doing something good and that this has an effect on somebody and that it's improving their life. And that, you know, and you want that feedback. And by doing it the way you just described, you're actually getting more happiness yourself. And that's what I, you know, talked about with Michael Norton. And what I believe is, listen, if we can change the way people give to charity, and instead of just, yeah, I wrote a check to the Red Cross today for, you know, $100,000, you know, or whatever, I feel great about myself. It's, can we somehow organize so that when you give that money, you actually see the effects of it? I mean, that's where the real, you know, feedback is going to come, which, in my opinion, is just going to encourage people to give more, right? Because they're not only feeling good about, oh, I gave, but they're also getting that feedback, which is going to enrich their lives and make them feel happier. Mm-hmm. It's a drug in and of itself that people are going to go, oh, my God, I want that again.
Right.
I hand that guy the $20 because, oh, my God, thank you so much. Now I can eat today. And then you see how happy he is. That's going to feel so much better than just dropping it in the bin.
Absolutely. You know? And, you know, whether the guy eats today or not with what you gave him, the gift is in the giving. Okay, you can't dictate to somebody. It's not a gift and it's not charity. If you want to direct it or you want to use it for your own ego and build yourself up. You know, most of the time I don't even talk about what I do for other people, but I was happy after I donated all this really good bedding to this senior, a woman who's living alone, who someone had donated her a bed, which just happened to be the same size. And when the guy I gave it to give to her, came back, I said, how did that lady like that bedding? And he said she had tears in her eyes. She was elated.
And how great did that feel?
It made me feel like $1 million, pardon the pun.
Right?
And, you know, I know people. You know, look, my own son, he's been up and down financially. And, you know, I remember when he was, you know, lucky to be making minimum wage, and he was really up against it. And one day he's leaving the house to go to work on the bus. He didn't have a car. And I noticed his backpack was bulging with shoes. And I said, what are you doing with those shoes? He said, Mom, there are men on the bus that have no shoes, and I'm going to give these to them.
Oh, that's
okay.
Awesome.
So, you know, when you work from the heart, you get that love in return. So if you are not, it's, you know, love is happiness too. And we go back to what we said a little earlier. Don't put your expectations for happiness on anybody else. It's an inside job. You've got to figure out what makes you happy and do it, just like you did, Adam. I'm sure you took quite the pay cut to do what you're doing now.
Yeah, but you know what? It's like, you know, making this film, Pursuing Happiness, was my pursuit of happiness, you know? And, you know, and it's true. It's not about money. It's about, you know, actually doing good for the world and having a positive effect on your society. And, you know, it's invaluable work. And it brings me incredible joy and happiness to be able to do that work. There's a great moment in the film where we interviewed Richard Sherman, who is the infamous Disney songwriter who wrote, you know, all the Mary Poppins and It's a Small World,
right,
Winnie the Pooh. And he tells this great story that he was like, oh, listen, I was at a lecture at USC and somebody asked me how much money I made on Winnie the Pooh.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and he's like, I thought it was such a smug, you know,
it's very rude. It's very rude.
Right? Very rude. And he said, you know what? He goes, many years ago, there was a girl in Texas who had fell down a well. And I remember a story when I was a kid. He's like this, the little girl fell down a well and all these, you know, and they had to like come out with all this heavy equipment and dig a parallel well to get her out. And it took hours and hours and hours, you know, a whole day or 2 days to actually accomplish it. And when she got out, she said, I want to thank all these incredible men who dug this well and saved my life. But most of all, I want to thank Winnie the Pooh.
Right.
Because her grandmother sat there singing Winnie the Pooh to her down the well for hours. And she goes, Winnie the Pooh was in a great tightness and he got out. And I'm going to get out.
I remember that. And I think that little girl's name was Victoria. I remember that. It was like on the news constantly for days.
Right. And he goes, you know what? I was the richest man in the world that day.
Absolutely. Well, that was great. I mean, the whole film is great. I understand you're going to move it to streaming services this year, so people might be able to see it, you know, on demand, or I hope you're pushing it towards Netflix.
We're definitely pushing it in the fall. Right now we're in the theatrical, on-demand theatrical, so you can bring the film to any theater anywhere around the country. Just go onto our website, pursuinghappiness.com. And there's a link there for Tug, which will allow you to kind of sign up and host a screening wherever you want. Invite all your family and friends because, you know, there's nothing better than sharing this kind of stuff and information and inspiration with your family and friends.
Absolutely. Well, Adam, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure, and it was great talking to you.
Same here. You take good care now.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye. Bye. Adam Schell's film, Pursuing Happiness. And if that doesn't put a smile on your face, nothing will. Remember, we come to this planet to have a good time. And if you're not enjoying your life on some level, you're stuck in the matrix. Thank you for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. And I'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.